You're listening to a podcast from thebodypro.com. The following podcast was recorded at the 14th Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections, also known as CROI 2007. For more podcasts and full coverage of this conference, please visit us online at thebodypro.com.
I'm Marshall Glesby from Cornell Medical College in New York.
So tell me, what do you think was the most interesting thing that you've seen here at CROI 2007?
Well, I'm going to stay away from the obvious things that I'm sure others have commented on, and really just mention a few of the interesting posters that are almost on the quirky side. So I'll just start with one by Daniel Fear from Mount Sinai, New York. They looked at a handful of patients with HIV infection who had acute hepatitis C that was documented, and looked at the results of their liver biopsies and found a surprisingly high proportion of them had advanced fibrosis, which was certainly unexpected, and I think has major, if confirmed in larger numbers of patients, could have major implications for potentially wanting to biopsy people with acute hepatitis C, and may have implications for treatment as well.
Were there other studies that you thought was interesting?
There was a pharmacokinetic study done by John Gerber and colleagues. He's the senior author from University of Colorado. They looked at the statin drug, rosuvastatin, in healthy volunteers in conjunction with lopinavir-ritonavir, and found unexpectedly a drug-drug interaction where exposure to rosuvastatin was increased during the time period that the subjects also took lopinavir-ritonavir. This was an unexpected interaction, and there are potential implications for treating HIV-infected patients in terms of toxicities if that isn't kept in mind.
Uh-huh. And people on lopinavir-ritonavir might have particularly high lipids. It's the drug that you wouldn't want that to happen with, kind of.
Right. I think it's not clear whether we can generalize to other protease inhibitors. The mechanism is not clear. It may not be the traditional sort of cytochrome P450 inhibition. It may be a drug transporter issue. Uh-huh. So I think further studies are needed with other drugs to see if it's a class effect or a specific effect.
Uh-huh. Very interesting. Any others? Quirky studies that you came across?
So there's one other interesting study that I wanted to mention in the area of hepatitis B HIV co-infection by Chloe Theo from Johns Hopkins, presented as a late breaker oral presentation today. Entecavir was thought to not have any anti-HIV activity, and many have advocated using it as a drug to treat hepatitis B in HIV-infected patients who don't require therapy for their HIV. Because it is thought not to have HIV activity, there wouldn't be issues with developing resistance to monotherapy with the drug, HIV resistance, that is. In this study, they looked at three patients from their clinic at Johns Hopkins who had hepatitis B and HIV, and the treatment stories were a little bit complicated. Some of them had some prior brief periods of antiretroviral therapy, including with lamivudine, which has activity against hepatitis B as well. But the bottom line is that they found that they noted that these patients actually had about a 1 log reduction in HIV viral load after going on entecavir for hepatitis B. And this was unexpected, and in fact, they were later able to document data that suggests that entecavir is selecting for the M184V mutation, which confers high-level resistance to 3DC and FDC in HIV. It's not totally clear from the data whether the entecavir induced the resistance or just selected for it. It may have been pre-existing based on either transmitted virus or the prior use of antiretroviral therapy in some of these patients. But the data are interesting. They followed up with some in vitro studies suggesting that potentially entecavir does have anti-HIV activity, which was not previously known. And this actually led to a Dear Doctor letter from the FDA recently based on these data. There was some controversy in the question and answer session with a couple of established virologists, including one from Bristol-Myers Squibb, questioning these findings and noted that the BMS had done extensive studies of entecavir looking for HIV activity and found none in their assays. So whether it's a technical difference in the assays done, whether this is some sort of spurious finding or not, I think is unclear, but I think it's something that merits further study and careful attention if entecavir is going to be used in the absence of other in the absence of HIV therapy in people with Hep B HIV co-infection.
Is it often used in the absence of HIV therapy?
Well, it's a relatively new drug, so I don't know that's necessarily in wide use, but there, since most of the drugs that we think of using for hepatitis B also have HIV activity, if we want to treat just hepatitis B alone and not treat the HIV, then there's really only a limited number of drugs. Entecavir was on that list, potentially the adefovir at low doses, though I think it's not totally clear. It's thought that it won't have anti-HIV activity at the low doses used for hepatitis B, but I don't know how carefully that's been studied. And interferon, which I think people are loath to use just because of its tolerability issues.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from thebodypro.com. For more podcasts and full coverage of major HIV medical conferences, please visit us online at thebodypro.com.